Willis. How are you? Check that. I didn't have a place to write, so I wrote the name. That's a jet book. Rabosai, I'm very happy I came here. I must apologize to Rabbi Reifman, because whenever I miss an opportunity to listen to him and to hear his chiddushim, there are very few people, anybody in the world, who has produced so much Torah Gavov. It's just incredible. Hundreds and hundreds of pages in large tomes on various sectors of the world. And I apologize. I didn't mean it. I celebrated the first days of Pesach in Cleveland with my family, with some of my children. And about a year ago, I broke a front tooth. And when I ate the matzah, unbelievable, that the front tooth went out. And here I had to come. I couldn't talk. My teeth were very, were not there. There were three of them. So there was, my son said, maybe you can go to a dentist here before you go to the airport. I'd be at 2:05 at the airport to come to New York. And he has a dentist who wears a yarmulke, but I've never seen such a big office of a dentist. Well, you go to the dentist at night, this is a whole floor. He had about 7-8 people working there with him. And he wears his yarmulke. And I didn't see any Jews there except myself and my son who brought me. So, and I discovered that the archbishop, or the, I don't know if he's cardinal now, of Cleveland, wrote a whole, and I saw it once, an entire peon to this dentist of his. He says he's not afraid to wear a skull cap in the office. And he has all kinds of clientele. And he was very happy to do that. So I went to this dentist, and he put back, and he glued on, I don't know whether to use a very good material, it's already a little loose. And so I had a difficult day. You go to the dentist, and then you go to the plane. I get off the plane, I rush to my office just to see what's happening there. I haven't been there since Thursday or Friday. And we discovered that one of the greatest benefactors in the history of the yeshiva passed away today. He passed away during the afternoon. His name was Mr. Gluck. The new base medrash is called the Gluck Pavilion, the Gluck base medrash. That's what it's called. He gave probably the largest benefaction. It wasn't large enough to cover the entire base medrash. It was one of the largest, not the largest single benefaction in the yeshiva. He was a Talmud Chacham. He was probably, at his time, the outstanding Talmud Chacham young man in the Satmar Beis Medrash in Satmar. The Satmar Rebbe considered him to be his best friend. There was another one. It was Manfred Lehman's father-in-law, Eish Vashkowitz, if you know the name. So, and they made the Levaya in Yerayim. Within 3-4 hours, they brought the body to Yerayim. And they know how close I am. In fact, she said that she gave the Beis Medrash, which is my honor, so it's not a thing. And so I had to run down there, and by the time I got a car to get there, they left. And then they said they went to Satmar. They were in Yerayim. They weren't a few blocks. I couldn't understand how they went to Satmar, but it took me such a long time, Rabbi Yenach will please forgive me for telling you this, but I think it's interesting you'll know this. He was the closest to the Satmar. Well, he gave me probably the most money. But he was the outstanding Talmud Chacham in the, and they had a kollel, but it was not a kollel like this, it was half day they worked and half day they learned from, in Satmar. And he was the outstanding Talmud of the Satmar kollel. And they used to call him, I don't know what it means, maybe somebody's Hungarian, he was called Utzer, somebody told me. And said, not only one person said, well, he was called Utzer. I still don't know what Utzer means, but it meant that he's the best Talmud in the kollel of Satmar. So I rushed down, and it was too late there. I finally got to it. I couldn't find it. The taxi cab, they couldn't find it. Where it was, where Satma was. And there was nobody walking in the street. And then when I saw one person, two persons, I said, Yidzog me avu the Satma Beis Medrashes. They looked at me and ran away. Two of them ran away from me. So they probably had some some instructions that, you know, the strangers come and ask you, and they look like Gurion, get away from them. So this is what happened. So finally I made it here, and I'm really sorry, and that's why I apologize. I just think I came to the beginning. I was wondering like what you were going to do with Sermon Melech. I don't know if you discussed it at all. But it was a very fine chiddush. I'm happy that I made it. And I want to speak about the love. Now, I had times and occasions to speak about the love. I want to begin with telling you the following thing. The Rav Yorchak and we imagine that Dr. Belkin's Yorchak was in the same day. It may have been several hours. So it wasn't a 24-hour period that separated the two Yorchaks. For 13 years had elapsed from Dr. Belkin's passing and the Rav's passing. Dr. Belkin passed in 77 of the past century, and the Rav, the 20th anniversary, the Yorchak falls on what 20 years ago was 1993, at that time, which was 20 years. So there is one other couple like that that occurred to me when I was coming down here. I don't know if anybody here would know it. I think so you know, but probably on the court. I can't begin to describe the contribution, the massive contribution of the Rav, almost unparalleled, in Talmudim, and influence upon millions of people. And the Rav was very close to Dr. Belkin at one time. And even when they weren't close on the surface, each one thought that the other was the most important person that he had to impress. And I can tell you that. Dr. Belkin wanted to impress only one person in life, and that was Dr. Milhoff. And the Rav equally, he conveyed to me, he wanted to impress the other person, even when they didn't talk. But who else do we have that kind of double? I didn't realize it until a few years ago, and I always forget to say. You had, who was the Mashgiach of Tells, not of Tells, of Lakewood. What was the name of Mashgiach of
Lakewood?
Rabbi Wachtfogel. Rabbi Wachtfogel died 40 years plus after Rabbi Aaron Kotler, and that was the partnership. Rabbi Wachtfogel, Rabbi Aaron was a dominating figure. Who was a Talmud of Yeshiva, he could have been otherwise a Mashgiach of Lakewood for so many years if he wasn't a Talmud of Yeshiva, that's for sure. But that would also happen. It's an amazing thing. Two people, two institutions that changed the world, changed the Jewish world, and both of them, I don't have to make it, Dr. Belkin was, and Dr. Delov had this kind of relationship. But that was it. They started when he first came. It was competed for who would become president of the Rosh Yeshiva and Yeshiva. Dr. Belkin died at that time. And the Rav emerged. That happened yet. Maybe that was his good fortune. He was not weighted down by administration and by doing things that he never could have done, maybe. So I just want you to know that it's not unusual. There's another couple whose contribution to Jewish life cannot be measured either. I wrote down several things. I didn't have as much time as I wanted to. The most difficult thing that I ever heard the Rav say, in retrospect, it's not so difficult, maybe. They honored the Rav in Yeshiva around 1960. I had already received smicha about 40 years at that time. Everybody believes it. And
45.
And the Rav made a speech. It was in honor of Rabbi Klavan, and the Rav spoke for Rabbi Klavan, the bracha. And he says, you know, we think we're doing a good job. I don't believe, he made a statement, and it was shocking, that there were 25,000 Orthodox Jews. Really was a practicing Shomer Shabbos in America. I heard that statement at Shadish Mephidish. That was 1960. And it could have very well been. There are many people I know in most shuls, you had a lot of people came to Shabbos shul, they were carried in. They didn't have the sense of halacha, of the minutiae of halacha. And they did other things. I know the first year I was a rabbi, and I'm not going to tell you the year, the first year as a rabbi, so I had some very fine, I had a gabbai. He said, you're a Pesach gabbai. And he got sick, and he didn't come to shul, and he said he's quite ill. You know, so I made that I was going to be a Malacha Chodol and have the Shabbos. At the time I went to him, but it seems like he had the television blaring, and his wife says, "Who is it? Who is it?" You know, she goes, "This is Rabbi Chalal." Wait a minute! And then took about a few minutes. She had to put off the television. You know, and this was the Gabbai of the shul. And I wouldn't believe it. He never missed a minion in the morning. He was retired, he was a baker, didn't miss a minion in the morning, came every morning. There's a Tillum Club, which I wasn't aware of. It was 5:30 in my show. I never came that early. So once by accident, I came that early, and I saw they were middle of the Tillum Club. And they had it for years, the Tillum Club. And he was there every morning, the Tillum Club. But he wasn't. I'll just give you one example, what Shmir Shabbos was. And he was really makriv. It was hard to keep Shabbos not to go to work. Forgetting about, I would imagine that the rug meant that. Because to say that there weren't 25,000 or so Jews who didn't work in shops with their picadillos or other things, it would be a hard statement to make. But I heard that statement from him. And he said that it was a very sorry statement he's making. He believes it. And he was very pessimistic at that time. That was about 1950, 1958, 59, I don't know. Remember it from later?
No, when he spoke to Rabbi Clayton?
Yeah, Clayton was the guest of honor. He spoke for Rabbi Clayton twice, was the RCA made. This is an yeshiva, a beautiful alumni. You know. I speak to him about, and I want to make this, I mentioned Ralph Rochfogel and Lamarin precisely because I want to make the tie here, which I think is equally, if not more, in some ways, as a relationship. But I remember, and this I maybe said once here, I don't know. Everybody used to ask the love, how did you go to Berlin? Here the love was not a neophyte. He was considered it's as young as he was. I can tell you when I married with my first daughter, so she happened to marry Amira. He's a wonderful man, fine type of chacham. So I said, "You have the love." Never dawned upon me. My daughter would be the love, and I was with him almost two times a week, three times a week. So he said, "No, he wants to have." The Rosh Yeshiva of Mir. What's his name? No, Kamenovsky is the president of Mir. Huh? Shmuel Berber. He went to Shmuel Berber to be the. And he had his father was a Hasidic Yid. He wasn't. He was a businessman, but he didn't. But he was a Hasidic Yid. He came from Lublin. And this child was born after the war, and he had lost a family. I never really inquired what it was. So he heard my future son-in-law say this. He said, "I can't." He couldn't believe it. He says, "You basically the love is." Yes, the bank when this event transferred to Alton. He was there first of all when the mayor of Berlin. Mayor Shapiro. Announced to the Jews in Lublin, he came from a suburb of Lublin, he really was a rabbi of a suburb of Lublin, the yeshiva was in Lublin. And he announced to them he's going to the Knesset Gedola and he's going to propose a Daf Yomi. It was electrifying. So here's his name. And he says, Yuvais has the ganze Europe hat geschämt mit Rabbi Yeshaber. This young youth. I never heard it before, but I heard it directly from him. The ganze Europe, this is going into Lublin, into the western part of Poland, away from Litva, and Geschemt with Rabbi Yeshaber, this young youth. So I would ask him, I once asked him, and I never really asked him except once, and he was dumbfounded because something happened. And I said to him, I said, Rebbe, how did your mother let you go? I said, how did your parents let you go to Berlin? Reb Chaim's grandson, who learned with Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim died when he was 15 years old. They were in Warsaw. I know how much he learned with him. He learned with him. And they say that Reb Chaim said he had a better mind than his. So how did you allow a young boy like that? How did your parents allow a young man? I don't think my mother would have allowed it. My mother was in America, but I think she would have allowed it. I told her that. So he said to me, my mother wanted me. Just like this. He said, what did your father say? He gave me a dirty look. I wrote this down. He was so upset that I asked that question about what did Moshe say, that he was really, his face had changed in him. So he went to Berlin. There's several things about Berlin I want to tell you. That the Gdolim, Rav Yigal Finkel, who was a Mir Rosh Yeshiva, who was a great Mir Rosh Yeshiva in Mir, and then of course, he went to Eretz Yisrael after the war. He built Mir and Eretz Yisrael before that. I met him several times. And I had Benish, who was his son, was a Maishur for a long time because they had the Chazap, was one of his great brother, had unfortunately had cancer and was in Montefiore Hospital for almost a year, on back and forth. He said, if you want, take Rachmanowitz. And he came in and it didn't help. So he told me that people used to come to Europe and they always stopped by in Warsaw, and they went to visit Reb Moshe. They knew that Reb Moshe was a stop. Reb Moshe would write a little note, somehow would communicate with his son that if Jabez in Berlin, he should help this man. And the Rav told me he used to take them to the doctors because they didn't know how to speak German, so he but they didn't know how to speak well, and he would take them. And it was very important because he didn't have any food. He said food was hard. I'm telling you things that and he said that he was waiting always for a Rosh Yeshiva to come along. So when Rashi came along, they wanted him to be attached to them. He would take them to the doctors. So they used to ask their Achsanya, whoever was their host, said, you have to find a place for that younger man that he should be. Then he used to speak to and learn to all these people. Then, of course, he had the Dvar Avram. The Dvar Avram was, of course, the Lord of Kavanah. And he was a Gadol Hador. And Dvar Avram was one of the great sforim that came out in the past century. Makes sense. And Dvar Avram always came to Potsdam. Potsdam was this beautiful suburb of Berlin. It later became infamous, famous and infamous. During the war, I think I'm not sure, but right near Potsdam was a decision to annihilate the Jewish people. And then later, today again, it's a spa, whatever it is. It's a vacation place, Potsdam, not London. He would go to Potsdam. The Dvar Avram would go while he was there, he would go to Potsdam. And he said, I would come there, and we would spend a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks together. And I said, they said, Rebbe, and I said, I'm going to see if they said that he wanted to make a shirach with you. With his daughter, that seems to be. So Rebbe just gave me a look. Not a very happy look. He did answer the question. He probably thought it was impertinent even to make the assertion. But this is the relationship that he had with all these Gdolim. He said he went, then I'm not to tell you how he marked all the Gdolim too. He told me this was a real great Talmud Chacham, which was a little overestimated, and I thought I'm not going to tell you about this. One of the most important things I want you to know, I don't know if he ever showed it to you, one of the most important letters, the Rav wasn't the letter writer. He wrote almost every speech he would have. But he didn't write letters except to very few people. And he wrote a letter to Rabbi Yenak. That is an extraordinary letter. I thought I'd tell the people once in a while. Baruch Hashem. And I think I told you this remarkable story. I was here last time. Last time Rabbi Yenak revealed to me something that I didn't know all the years. And I walked around with a mystery for 25, 30 years. When I was a Talmud in Rabbi Soloveitchik, the Rav Shir, so we had a boy, and not a young man, not a man, he was an Eliezer. He was a little extraordinary or out of the ordinary, It was a, he was a tough hombre. He came from Europe. He was in the forest during the war and with the partisans. But he originally came from, he was 14 years old. He already was in the yeshiva of Telz. And he went in, he was another whole group of people, three or four people like that. So he was, you couldn't corral him, you couldn't hold him down. He said what he wanted to say, he was unafraid. So we were learning, mind you, and I think I told you, we learned the Sechta Nidor. It's not an easy Sechta. It's not the run-of-the-mill Sechta. No Masechta is a run of the mill, but I mean it's a different sort of Masechta. So he learned all of Nidra and all of Mikvos, almost all of Mikvos, the first year. Then he spent another 2.5 years, went over all of Nidra, over 70 baht, a second time. Later on he could get 10 baht a year, 20 baht a year. He went 72 baht. We did 3 baht a week. And the major in Yunim. He was in the major in Yunim. So he... So one of the things he did mikvos. Now the problem with mikvos is there's no gemara mikvos. So it was harder to negotiate mikvos than his other receptors. Other receptors, you take the gemara gives you direction how to go, where to go, and mikvos lets you. You have to have all the shots to have many of the yenim mikvos, but it's not all part together. And the Rav had to struggle with mikvos many times. He struggled with it. He went and he couldn't get an answer once. It happened several times. So this young boy gets up, this young man gets up, and he tells him he's a wonderful terrace. And the Rav says, where did you get it? So you remember that story. So he says, where did you get it? He says, I got it from the Tosfos Rid on Yishami, Rabbi Orlovsky. He was a famous Slutsk Rebbe, Rosh Yeshiva. He founded the Yeshiva of Slutsk. And then he went to America to raise money in order to put out the Yishami. And he was a great leader, the Slutsker. He brought with this Alma Meltzer from a beginning Slavotka. That's where he was then. It was Alma with his brother-in-law, the Moshe Mordechai Epstein, who later became the head of the Chevron Yeshiva. Slavotka Yeshiva became one of the greatest names of the last 100, 200 years. And he founded the Chevron Yeshiva when he went there. So they were brothers in law. They were married. There were four great rabbanim, married four daughters of a rich woman, and they started to be able to learn. Yeshiva Chana was the one who was seems to be the shakhan of these four. This is Al Meltzer, the Moshe Mordechai Epstein, and then you had Kaplan. He came to Turkey. He was later. He founded together Rabbi Ruda, Rabbi Ruda's father-in-law. What was Rabbi Ruda's father-in-law's name? Do you remember? He was one of the four from here. So the Rav didn't know. They said he gave the Rav, and it was a good Turk apparently. And I said, where do you get that Turk? Where did you see it? Did you see it? He said, he told him where he saw it. The Rav became so angry with him. I said, I've never seen the Rav so angry, and he was bent at any mayhem to get it. And he told him, I never again want you to mention that name in this class. And then a few months later or so, again the Rav had a big question. And he said, and he did tell me, he says, where did you get it? And he told him the same source about it. So I can't even go to the source, you won't believe it. I won't tell you the rest of the story. I'll just tell you there was mayhem in that classroom because of that. And I could never understand, I guess. I didn't know what it was. And of course, you gave the answer to me just 2 years ago. This is a mystery of mine, a mystery of everybody in the class who remembers, at least for 50 years. So Rabbi Ganak, I'm not going to give you the name, Rabbi Ganak. So then this man, who the Rav, he despised in the classroom. So when I became, I came to Yeshiva, so he calls me up about a year later, he says, you have a lot of influence with the Rav? I want the Rav to write on Lutzer for my Sefer. You're a Sefer in the Ramban or something. So I went to the Rav, and I told him, So bring them me. I said, fine, time to call. He said, fine. He forgot the whole thing. He just remembered. The only thing his mind remembered was the truth of this boy. This young man was a fine time to call. He said, bring him here. And the Rebbe didn't ask that. I'm very ready to bring him here. He didn't have his time to fetch it. So I brought him there. And the Rebbe looked it over. He told me it was a very fine contribution to the Ramban and all that. And he would like the Hamalotza. The Rebbe hardly ever wrote an Hamalotza. And there's a many story. I don't know if I ended it at that time. So he kept calling me, this young man. And the Rebbe was always busy. He never sees him. And every time I spoke to the Rebbe, I said, yes, I want to write it. It's a good safer and everything else. I never knew if the Rebbe wrote an Hamalotza or not. But it happened to have been in the library. I forgot the incident. It happened to be in the library. And I saw the book by him. It just was on the desk. So I start to look at it. I see it's his book safer. So I look to see if the Rebbe has a Hamalotza. And there's no Hamalotza there. And he died about it. Some years ago. And there was no Hamalotza. I felt very bad. So I met he has a son and a grandson were learning in the Beis and some other boys in Yeshiva together. And I didn't know who they were. And I went to him and I said, and he gives me the name. And I say, you know this fellow? He said, that's my grandfather. That's a grandfather. Young boy, that's my father. So I said, I want to tell you, the Rebbe thought a great deal of your father. And he even said he was going to write Hamalotza for the sake he put out. He says, we found the Hamalotza. Isn't that amazing? We found the Hamalotza. And we don't know why he didn't put it. My thing is that the Rebbe sometimes would take it 2-3 years. It could be he waited. He couldn't wait any longer. He told him shit, and then the Hamalotza came. Or he maybe wrote the Rambam, yet he saw the Sefer, and again he reminded himself that he owes it to him, and he appreciated the Sefer so much that he gave. I don't know of any other instance. So they published the Sefer. They published the Sefer. Because he died 3 years ago. So a year after the earthquake, they published the Sefer with the Rav Hamalotza. So that is a very unusual story. The Rav, and then talking about the relationship between the Rav and Dr. Belkin, so you have Gorin, with Rav Rashi, so he gave a shir, and he was very sure about his shir. And Gorin did not lack for a certainty of his own godless. And he had godless things altogether different. He's one of the real extraordinary personalities. So after the shir, he walked into the Dr. Belkin's room. Dr. Belkin was there and the Rav was there. And he started to tell the Rav that, said, do you agree with me? You know, you see something in Yiddish, so you go back to him. And the Rav refused to say it. He wasn't apparently so enamored by the shir. And he refused to be pushed to say it. So then Dr. Belkin, who he didn't think would, began talking to him. He said, and Dr. Belkin was seated at his desk, and we were about, I would say, from the distance of this shulchan to about over here, and we had a settee, you know, of a two-seating couch and with a plush chair, and we were talking, and then to Dr. The Rav says something. Dr. Belkin is telling him, you know, and he mentioned some Rishon, and I couldn't catch it. He mentioned Rishon, and he said to him, he doesn't agree with you. He agrees with the Rav, something like that. So he just keeps ignoring him. He doesn't look at him even. Didn't know who he was. So the Rav says, when Dr. Belkin speaks, you listen. He said, yes, the Neret, that's what Tzu was his act. That's what we call him. And then he felt that, and he ignored again, Yichwai Duzok. The Neret, he felt very uncomfortable with the Rav. So he's just ignoring Dr. Belkin, like he's an Amoritz, as the Rav says. And at the end, what happened was, Dr. Belkin got up, and he had very few books in his office. He had books, he had a Shas, he had a Rambam, and he had very few other kinds of books. And he went straight to a place, and he picked out the Sefer, and he remembered where it was. So later, he didn't look up for many years, and he found the place, and he showed it to him. And the Rav said, Yehovah Yisrael, as when Dr. Belkin read, Peking Sue. That was the again. Then we had one the Ovadia Yosef of Langazut. The Ovadia Yosef came to Yeshiva, and he also, you know, had a sense of who he is, Baruch Hashem, and he gets up and makes a shindel of his head. And he speaks highly of the Rabbi Sittur, of the Hadar. He went to whoever he said, like, "Well, one thing I don't know. How is it that after Yaakov HaSaladina, after all the wars you got to, this was after the Six-Day War already, you know, the Rav never once came to Eretz Yisrael? The only time he came to Eretz Yisrael was in 1935 when he was running for Rashi of Tel Aviv. And my father, my Zeder Rabbi, introduced him to Berkat HaRav. That was a famous, there were several things there. And Rav Kook was then ill. So he said to him, Now it's a terrible thing to say. You went, were you there that time, friend? You did this. He said this. So he said it. And you know, it was a joke, and everybody began to see this. It looks like a lot of you saw he was really upset, and I saw him later. And he was quite, he didn't tell you in words, but he was quite upset. He said, "So it's a joke, but you don't call him in a Godel Hadar and then say this kind of a story." The most difficult moments of my life, almost, were when Dr. Belkin became very ill. Dr. Belkin was young when he passed away, and he was at the end. He was in the Einstein Hospital in the Bronx, and the Rav was calling me up every day to find out how the Rav is doing, how Dr. Belkin is doing, and he was getting worse and worse. And he was a very handsome man, and I saw him when he was there. He was so handsome. Before he died, you have no imagine. Her face just eased off the last few days. And I said to the Rav, I called him up and I said to him, "Rebbe, I think it's time for you to come." So he came with me. Rabbi Twersky, his son-in-law. And I met him at the parking area of the Einstein. We went to the room. And I said, "I didn't want to go." So only Rabbi Twersky was very close to the Rav, to Dr. Belkin as well. And the Rav went in, and then I heard a burst of tears for the Rav. And also for Dr. Twersky. And Dr. Belkin was crying, but he didn't have the strength. You could hear it, but it's not. But they really burst out in tears. That's never been reported. That showed you the depth of their feeling. Finally, I'll close with a story that Dr. Belkin once told to the Rav, and I try to imitate the best I can. I went. Maybe you were there that time. This is also in the early 60s. They were honoring Dr. Belkin. So the Rav made a very outstanding drasha. And then Dr. Belkin, you know, Dr. Belkin was not particularly a very special orator. He said very important things. And Dr. Belkin, for some reason, I remember, got up and said, "Dr. Belkin, who came from Baden, and then he went for almost a year to Mir, and he told me that Yehuda Finkelitz offered him the highest stipend ever offered to a student in Mir. He came not to go to America in 1929. And he went to America anyway. And then he wanted to come back after a year. So at that time when Dr. Belkin arrived in America, the same time, that's when Rav Shimon Shkup, he came to Yeshiva. And then Rav Shimon Shkup wanted to remain at Yeshiva. And there were letters to prove this. But the Chaim Eiser writing in his own name, and writing in his name, wrote several letters to that he must come back. He cannot leave Vilna, and that the Chofetz Chaim and I agree that you must come back, you cannot remain in America. So Dr. Belkin went to him and said to him, I want to go back with you. I can't acclimate here. This is the first year he was here. 29 of Vilna. And by the way, you know who the Chavrusa of Dr. Belkin was? The Chavrusa of Dr. Belkin was a Magdiach later of Lakewood. What's his name? Rabbi Wachtfogel. He was a Chavrusa. And Rabbi Wachtfogel tells the story. He said, used to say in humor, he used to say that Dr. Revel, all that show, the founder of Yeshiva, he was a great guy in his own right. So he came to, when Dr. Belkin came, and he was known as the great, he got smear at 17 years of age, that's what Chofetz Chaim gave him, and he came with his tremendous name as a great Talmid Chacham. And they put him, by the way, you know, Yeshiva had very stratified levels. A guy was here, he could be the second year, third year, fourth, that's what he remembers. And Dr. Belkin came here, he was 27, 28 years old, received his doctorate in 6 years, never went to a graduate, never went to, and they put him into a mending of the story with the rug. And they put him into the second highest class. He said he was almost at a level with the Baisha when he came in. He did the second highest level here, this Dr. Rebel. So you can imagine how he sacrificed in taking other responsibilities. So Rabbi Shimshkup told him, he says, I wouldn't go back. Europe is lost. He didn't even know what Hitler is, but the surge of socialism, communism, all the isms in Europe was so powerful that when 1920, in Kletz, 90% of the people in Kletz were Shemesh Shabbos. In 1939, just when the war broke out, 10% were. In a period of 19 years, there was such a revolution. That's a very hard to understand. So, he stayed on in Yeshiva. And then he went to Brown University, and he became there was a yeshiva in Waterbury. It was the first yeshiva, it was a yeshiva like Europe, by Chabotka. Rabbi Levenberg was the rabbi of that yeshiva. And he made it in Waterbury, in Hartford, but he needed Rosh Yeshiva, see. And he had some, he didn't really went away. So the only Rosh Yeshiva he could bring was Dr. Belkin, who would be in a level that he wanted them to be in, and that level was at Brown University. At that time, going to that, which was against the whole purpose of this yeshiva. That's a very strange thing. So Dr. Belkin got up and he said, his admission salvation was very, very nice. The doctor, he heard a young boy was in Brown, he used to invite him to come to Shabbos. So almost every 2 weeks he would come once. So once he comes in 1936 or 37, I remember when, and he saw Reb Chaim Sefer. The first time he saw Reb Chaim Sefer, the rabbi just received Reb Chaim Sefer. And he said to him, I want to have it. Please allow me to see it. I want to see it. So also I didn't read it myself, I just got it, the whole thing. So he said to him, I'll give you 2 weeks. Next time you come here in 2 weeks, I'll give you 2 weeks to read it. He came back after 2 weeks and he said in front of the Yerok, you remember? He wrote down 57 questions on Reb Chaim, and he said he did all of Reb Chaim, which people devoted an entire lifetime, in 2 weeks. And the Rav acknowledged it. You remember? And the Rav said he didn't understand it either. And the Rav told me that I didn't understand. I knew everything Reb Chaim said, but in the Sefer, I couldn't see it all. He must have told you something like that too. This letter. So, we come here to honor. He was not a gadol mir in America. He was a gadol of gedolim. And he was also a very great honor. Because he was a very powerful personality, it somehow conceals sometimes. As anyway, I can tell you that he never really, whenever I say a word for him, he really didn't believe it, or he didn't want to accept it. And b'makom ha'sheta motzeg du'losa shalakash baruch hu, less of anybody, shom ato motzeg losa nuso. The great thing as I saw the Lord was, he was so great, none greater. And in the frame of his greatness was tremendous another. Thank you. Thank you. Good job, good job, Michael.